driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okey-doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds, and welcome into this edition of The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Brunelli, back in the saddle today after I missed last week's episode, but Dane, David, Andy P., and Jake held it down for us. But I am back alongside David and Dane. Guys, how are we doing today?
Did we really hold it down?
I was going to say Dane held down the ship. I went through the regular
floor. The motions?
Yeah.
Well, you do a lot as our producer, though. David is, we don't talk about much, but David runs our entire board during the show, so he's the one running all the audio and everything like that. But we have a big show for you guys today, coming back into the regular crew. We're start first with some Redbirds, and we're going to get into some NHL action. Then we're going to have Kaylee Sugimoto join the show and talk a little bit about ISU gymnastics before we round it out with pick six, and I try and make up for Andrew Petrushevsky absolutely ruining me even worse than already. Even I was already at the at the bottom of the pick six standings, and he made it even worse, and he made all the picks I wouldn't have made on purpose. Andy P., always a jokester. But first and foremost, I think I need to set my lineup. So I saw you guys were talking about a trade before the show even started. It's big into fantasy football right now. It's week 10. Everyone's kind of, it's that breaking point for fantasy football where you're like, am I going to pay attention for the rest of the year or not?
You know, I reposted an Instagram post today. It was Buda Baker from the Cardinals yelling at his team, and then the caption was, every manager who has a 3-6 record right now. I have a 3-6 record in about three leagues right now, so it's been a tough year fantasy-wise, but we're going to pick it up these last few weeks of the season.
I'm in the thick of it for most of my leagues.
Worst
record is 4-5, but every other league is 5-4, so it's like not like I'm not comfortable, but all means, but like I think I'm in the playoffs for every situation, though, which is nice.
You're 4-5. Is that the Z&D league or no?
No, it's another league, and it's probably the saddest thing is it's my best team, too, which is just the way it goes sometimes in fantasy football when you play the head-to-head format.
I just checked. I'm actually good to go. I have no Carolina or Atlanta players tonight, so that's actually a good thing. Then lineup setting will be Saturday's issue, but there is a Sunday morning game, so I can't wait until – I cannot wait till
11 I can't believe you're setting your lineup right now. Like I kind of was caught off guard by that.
To set my lineup. I mean, I always forget.
Fernandes always asks, like, the question, like, this is the rest versus rust argument. Yeah. He's rusty right now.
Yeah, exactly. I missed last week. I forgot to set my lineup. I just checked my confidence pool. If you think I'm bad at pick six, imagine having to pick 16 games a week.
But, how was the Brady divorce hearing?
Oh, it was solid. I mean, Tom, when he asked me to be an expert witness, I just thought, you know what, I kind of have to. I just got to help out a friend. But we're going to talk a little bit about Redbird football.
What a start to Red Zone.
Well, that might have been the best three-minute open of Red Zone in history. Just, I don't even know. Anyway, Redbirds, David, we had a front row seat, or, well, back row seat, announcing the game to the other day with ISU and Youngstown State, and it was a thriller in the first half. 17-13, 30 points scored, overbetters were rejoicing, and then the under hit because no touchdown was scored until 5 seconds left, and Youngstown State won. What did we see there?
Man, last Saturday's game, calling-wise, I think we had one of our best games.
We had fun, yeah.
It was a really good game, really fun game to call. The Redbirds, like you said, started off hot with freshman quarterback Tommy Rittenhouse on the first play of the offensive game for the Redbirds, 42-yard run to the house. We were saying to ourselves, okay, this could be a pretty good game here for the Redbirds. A few three and outs, a few missed call penalties led to this being a close game. And that's been the story for the Redbirds, you know, really the whole year. They let teams stick around and make contests out of games that should not be a contest. You know what last week meant to you and your chances at the FCS playoffs, and you know, you let that one slip through your fingers. It was a tough one for Redbird fans.
So now, barring a huge upset against South Dakota State, the season's basically over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unfortunate, too, that you roll into that game with Rittenhouse instead of Anikstad, which had a shoulder injury. But I think he balled out for what you could expect from a redshirt freshman.
He scored all the touchdowns.
He did. And on a, like, imagine being thrown into that situation. You have the FCS playoffs on your shoulders. You're also playing in very windy weather in a home crowd against a team that is also right in the thick of it. Like, you're, like, if you switch the game with Western Illinois and you have Western, obviously I know we're going to Western to play them, but if you have Western there, I think the Birds come away with the dub still. And I think another good story to take away from it is Daniel Sobkowitz has been probably one of the best storylines this year for the Redbirds.
It was interesting. He was like the only receiver basically targeted the whole day.
That's actually literal. He was probably the only receiver that caught a pass, and I think the next receiver that might have caught a pass might have been in the backfield. But, I mean, you said it right there. Sobkowitz last week had career best with catches with 10 and yards with 96 to lead the Redbirds. A very, very underwhelming receiving room last week.
I think the receiving room has just been underwhelming all year, to be honest with you. They really haven't seen much. It's been Sobkowitz, it's really been no one, which I was honestly surprised after the performance against Wisconsin. I know we keep going back to that week one performance, but I feel like the wide receivers were running good routes. They were getting open. I know with a Brock's back offense, it can sometimes get into like the run heavy. Ever since James Robinson, it's always been a run first offense. But the offense this year just hasn't been the strong suit of this team. It's been a lot of defensive games, getting put in good position, getting turnovers. So that's just been the story of the year.
Yeah, so like David said, it was literal. Sobkowitz, 6 receptions, 96 yards. Good game for him. But the only other target that was not in the backfield, like David said, would have been Bryson Deming, the tight end. No Tanner Tallo, the other tight end. No Brock Anikstad. I mean, maybe each of them was also dealing with something just like Zach Anikstad, but whichever way you look at it, that was interesting that the young quarterback Tommy Rittenhouse was really finding a Cooper Cup favorite kind of in Daniel Sobkowitz.
But, you know, we talk about the struggles that they had to endure last week. Not really, and like Dane said, the whole year. But let's talk about one highlight that the team had last week. They had 184 rushing yards. I thought they were the Chicago Bears out there, guys.
Not just that, but like with Rittenhouse, like he ran that. Like I'm excited to see him hopefully take over this offense in the future when Anikstad's time is all said and done. I mean, he wasn't bad by any means. I wasn't disappointed with his performance.
He's a leading rusher for the Redbirds. 10 attempts, 2 touchdowns.
Geneva kid too.
Yep,
kind of a local boy.
A little more local than Minnesota.
A little bit. Hey, little bit. We don't judge.
No, I'm not judging in any way.
Hey there.
Compared. Yeah. Just a little bit more up north still, too.
You know, one of the other things I think the Redbirds don't really exploit well, they have some really agile and elusive receivers. I was on a call with Blake. It was the game before I just did with you, Mikey. And we saw a ton of, you know, receivers that were a little bit on the smaller side, but they were agile, making plays for the Redbirds. We just don't see that enough. We kind of see, you know, quarterback drop back, read the seams, see if you can get one over the linebacker or outside the numbers. We don't really see those trick plays that, you know, kind of get your Tariq Cohen-type backs, you know, able to shine.
It's always back to the Bears for you. Pick another team.
Let me see. Raheem Mostert, what do you want from me?
We can just keep those comparisons all day, to be honest. But I think these ISU teams, these ISU games, I should say, like David said, they are playing to the opponent. But it's interesting because they only ever play one half. And I look at the two losses that coincidentally, as my roommates would say, I'm the one who jinxed them both these games because I called the plays, called the play-by-play for each of these games. Southern Illinois' loss, and that would have been 19-14. ISU tries to build a comeback, comes up short, and then Youngstown State has the lead for the entire game and then blows it.
Well, you're saying that's only in losses. How about Indiana State going 20-0 in the first half?
Yeah, 21-0, and then they came back and scored 20. We got a touchdown towards the end again, but again, only beat Indiana State 27-21.
Like, we need to start. The problem with all the ISU teams that we've talked about this year, whether it be volleyball, football, and hopefully not, we'll talk about basketball in a bit, but these teams need to close games.
Yeah.
You need to play throughout all four quarters, both halves, whatever it is, 3 sets. Close the game.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think you said it last week, Dane, where we were talking about football and how sometimes teams like to script plays, and you were wondering why ISU just didn't script the entire game. Coming out of that half, it doesn't seem like we make proper adjustments to be able to go through that second half and play efficient and getting up the field on offense and staying off the field on defense. It just doesn't seem like we make the right adjustments.
It's the difference, too, is in playing not to lose instead of playing to win, having an aggressive approach to it. One of my favorite lines from Shorzy is that they don't love to win, but they don't hate to lose, which is a huge issue. And I mean, they're probably going to lose next week, and they're going to lose probably pretty handily to South Dakota State.
9-1 overall, 7-0 in conference. The only loss for the Jackrabbits coming against Iowa in week one, and that would have been that famous 7-3 win for Iowa that everyone was talking about on social media. That was a meme. But they beat Missouri State, Western Illinois, South Dakota, North Dakota, North Dakota State, Indiana State, Northern Iowa, and now in their way is the Redbirds here. And the Redbirds need to win out in order to still have a chance at the playoffs. It's going to be interesting.
The Redbirds really got to scheme up something here for this weekend. It's going to be a tough matchup. This, you know, like we said, the size of their season, if they're going to make a playoff run or not. But it doesn't get easy, and this hasn't been the moral of the story for our season. We started out going against Wisconsin, like you said. That just wasn't a typical start to your year, facing a team of that caliber. And then here, facing another very good team that's really going to decide if you're going to continue to play or not. It's just the Redbirds haven't really caught a break.
And this South Dakota State team, they score with efficiency, and they could do it through the air or on the ground. They've got Mark Gronowski at QB, who's got a 17-4 touchdown to interception ratio. They've got Isaiah Davis, who averages 5.5 yards a carry with 9 touchdowns. He's probably going to close in on 1,000 yards against the Redbirds. And then the receiving core, they have 3 people with over 300 yards this year. And I believe 2 brothers, last name is Janky, in Jackson and Jaden. So they've got a very complete team. It's going to be a tough game for the Redbirds.
Speaking of Western Illinois, which is going to be the last game of the season for ISU after South Dakota State, that'll be at home. Monday night at home, Dame was on the call as the Illinois State men's basketball team fell to Western Illinois 71-68 in a game they led at halftime. Mr. Dreyfus, what happened with the Redbirds and Leathernecks?
Well, okay, it's misleading to say they led at halftime because about 15 minutes into the first half, they were down probably 7 points. The game was very streaky for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
The Redbirds, I liked some of the things I saw, especially the half-court heave going into halftime from Darius Burford. But the team's got a couple of nice players. I really liked what I saw from Kendall Lewis for 95% of the game. And the team, they just weren't closing baskets. They played discipline for 95% of the game, then got into foul trouble, double dribbles. It was a very sloppy first game, but that's to be expected.
So Ryan Peden brings in a couple big new transfers in Burford and Sandage, and then he keeps around a couple of nice returners, McChesney, Schmidt, Kendall Lewis. How do you think those transfer players complimented the already established couple that I named off?
Well, I really, really liked what I saw from Liam McChesney, still going up, grabbing boards, still taking stretch three or some threes as a stretch four or five. Seneca Knight looked like he is going to be a really important person on this offense. Didn't have a great night, but I really liked what I saw from Virginia transfer Malachi Poindexter. He appeared to cramp up in the fourth quarter, though. He was eating a banana on the sideline. Some fans in the stands said they heard a snap, like almost like a loud snap. It was weird. I personally didn't hear it while I was on the call, but this team is going to take some time to develop some chemistry. I just didn't really know how I felt about the play calls at the end. I would have probably went to a guard instead of Kendall Lewis inside 3 times with the game on the line, and then he slipped one. The last play, he slipped for a travel. But the double dribble, you can't do that. You're a senior leader on this team. You can't do a double dribble with the game on the line.
But you know, it seems like just looking at the stats here from that first game, they shot 37% from the field, 26 from three, 84 from free throw. Aren't good numbers, but this is going to be a team that wins it in the trenches. If you're basing it off this first performance, they have 46 rebounds to what was it? Western Illinois 30.
Well, Western Illinois is a very, very small lineup, and especially with their main point producers.
Illinois State does have some size, though, but they don't have a true five, which also brings us to signing day was today, and they got I'm blanking on his name, of course, but they got a true 6'9" center from Columbus, Ohio, and I think his last name's Chase, which should be the first true center that they've had in a minute. But they don't really have a true center. They run a couple of stretch fours, and the team overall looked like they're going to be a fun to watch team, and they should be able to shoot the three-pointer pretty efficiently.
You know, it's just the first game. We got a lot of season left. Like you said, once this chemistry builds to have a good foundation, we'll be all right.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from Peden, too. He really seemed to have a control of that huddle, something that Mueller might have lost towards the end of his tenure with the Redbirds.
As the book closes on football season, another opens on basketball season. We'll have lots of basketball talk to come in the upcoming weeks here on the Red Zone. But for now, we're going to take a quick break coming up on the Red Zone.
This is Illinois State Winkers Wright, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, Redbird County. Let's fly.
That was Illinois State running back Winkers Wright, a friend of the pod. I have an interview with him next week about a different story I'm working on, so hopefully if we have some audio from that, we can share it here on the show, because we love Wankers. Great player, an even better guy, and yeah, we have that spot from him now, so you'll be hearing that a little bit more often on the show. But we're going to talk first a little bit about some NHL stuff going on, and now a couple weeks into the season, I promised Dan we'd do a couple segments here about hockey, and it seems like the standings are fizzling out to about what we thought they'd be so far in hockey. Dan, who has been the team that you think has been the most surprising, though, at the top of either of these conference standings?
New Jersey Devils.
Please, Blackhawks.
No, we don't want with the draft that is coming up, with the generational talent, there is a 17-year-old currently that has 36 points in 15 games, which is ludicrous.
Crazy.
I'm not talking Luda. I'm talking Luda. Like, it's insane. But the New Jersey Devils, for sure, being 10-3 in what is a pretty mediocre Metropolitan Division, but it does feature the New York Rangers and Carolina Hurricanes, were two early season favorites for the Stanley Cup. But the Devils, good young team, got a couple first overall picks in Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes, so they've definitely been the early surprise for sure.
What team do you think is doing its best with the expectations they were given? I'm looking at Boston. I'm looking at the Golden Knights, maybe the Maple Leafs. Who do you think is really smooth sailing at this point?
Boston, I think, is overachieving a little bit, and I think they will come back down to earth. But Vegas is good. Their goaltending was going to be their big issue this year. They have Logan Thompson, who's 24 years old, and when you get wins as a goaltender, that's a huge confidence builder. But you want to look at it as not necessarily a team stat, because wins are a team stat. You want to look at their individual stats, which are save percentage, goals expected above average, or like goals saved. And Logan Thompson's been excellent. Their backup goalie is undefeated. He's 5-0 right now. And the Jack Eichel trade is paying instant dividends for them. And they have a very complete lineup. They are probably my favorite in the Western Conference to go to the Stanley Cup. It's early, though.
What about the Chicago Blackhawks? We'd be remiss not to talk about them in this NHL segment. I think my biggest surprise so far, and something I like to see, 7 goals, 9 points already for the captain, Jonathan Toews. He missed a lot of time last year, so see him be playing some of the best hockey of his career at his age here to start the season. Do you think he can keep this up?
Absolutely. I think he's having a little bit of a renaissance here. I like that the coaching change has been huge just for the offensive aspect of this team. It's like last week when I said the cultivation or something instead of acclimatize, whatever.
Yeah,
but overall, the team has been able to produce more offense, which is good, because you want to pump some of these stats up to trade these guys. I think Toews keeps it up, but I think another storyline that a lot of Hawks fans are watching is the success Kirby Dach is having in Montreal right now, as he would be the leading scorer on the Blackhawks if he was currently still with them.
Well, I think that's no surprise. Obviously, they knew what they were trading away by trading Kirby Dach, and I think you said it yourself. I think the Blackhawks are in a position where they do need to start trading viable talent just to try and make their own going forward. But it is surprising to see the Hawks are not doing absolutely terrible at 5-5, and their two leading scorers are the two Hall of Famers in the team.
Well, expect them to definitely come down to earth, because they're going to sell high on some of these players. One guy I want to keep and hold on until at least the deadline is Max Domi, because he's been great for the culture change. He's a physical presence, and I don't want to compare him to Andrew Shaw, because he's much more skilled than Andrew Shaw. But Patrick Kane took kind of a dirty hit from Matt Boldy, it was Tyson Yost of the Minnesota Wild, took a dirty hit from behind,
And Domi stepped up and stood up for Patrick Kane, which we haven't seen in probably 4 or 5 years, which is just a huge culture change under new head coach Luke Richardson.
Well, I like the comparison to Andrew Shaw because not only is he that, you know, enforcer-type player, but he also has the third most points in the team. So he's getting it done on the ice in addition to also being the guy to stand up for his teammates like that. So that's actually important, too.
Comparing him to Andrew Shaw, that would be a disservice to Max Domi because Max Domi has a lot higher pedigree. Andrew Shaw was kind of this...
He was greasy, but he was solid.
Yeah, Max Domi... has hands, a shot.
Right.
He was a first-round pick, and he kind of gets roped into that, like, Andrew Shaw territory because his dad's Ty Domi, who's a legendary enforcer in the NHL. So,
well, Andrew Shaw, I think I always talked about this with my dad especially. Andrew Shaw was just the best at kind of finding ways to score unconventionally, just roughing around in front of the net until long enough until it worked out. And I think that's just something that maybe Domi does a little bit, but like you said, has a lot more skill in his hands.
The Blackhawks, during the Stan Bowman era, were good at finding players that were on the brink of calling it a career because they weren't finding success in the NHL. Andrew Shaw was, I believe, weeks away from becoming a construction worker, and Brandon Hagel now of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who the Blackhawks got 2 first-round picks for, was a week away from becoming a teacher. And then he was traded for 2 first-round picks in the NHL. Kind of crazy.
But that's something that could be accredited to the Blackhawks' success, I guess, a little bit, to find these players, then eventually either flip them for draft compensation or win a championship with them, as you saw with Andrew Shaw.
For sure, and that's something I think they're going to do with Sam Lafferty, who they got for other Nylander, Alex Nylander, and they've turned someone that was a career AHLer into a respectable third-line player in the NHL.
On a more serious note, I want to talk a little bit, going back to the Bruins, about Mitchell Miller. I think Dane was the one who wanted to talk mostly about this one, and I know David and I have some comments, but Mitchell Miller, Dane, can you just take us through a little bit of what's going on with the situation? You know more than me.
Yeah, it's a really disappointing one as a hockey fan, because talk about a league that can't get out of its own way, especially when it comes to prejudice, inclusivity, anything negative regarding getting more people to enjoy the game of hockey. Mitchell Miller was a player who grew up in, I believe, to be Ohio. He was expelled from high school for bullying an African-American special needs student. He was called racial slurs and was bullied physically and was also forced to eat a lollipop or lick a lollipop that was dipped in a urinal. And this didn't come out until this player was under scholarship in college for the University of North Dakota. He was stripped of his scholarship, was still drafted by the Arizona Coyotes in the 4th round, and after backlash from fans and the league, he was cut from the Coyotes, and 2 years later, the Boston Bruins decided to sign him 6 days ago. Now, here's the issue with that. The Boston Bruins didn't consult the league because Mitchell Miller is not eligible to play in the NHL, according to Commissioner Gary Bettman. Now, the issue with this, too, that he signed the contract, thanks to GM Cam Neely, he is due to be paid over the next 3 years $800,000 a year, and there's no way out of it. And he's not even going to play in the NHL. He's not going to earn this money, but he's still going to get paid it. And Isaiah Myers Crothers, the victim, has come out and said that Mitchell Miller has attempted to apologize with no receipts of making up for his past bullying efforts, working with any sort of inclusion group. And Mitchell Miller is benefiting, and he's still trying to get back into the NHL when he should be honestly blacklisted and probably never be able to play, because being able to play a kid's game for your livelihood is something that shouldn't be taken lightly, especially when you're a role model. So,
you know, this is such a tough situation to talk about. I purposely decided not to speak about the game, in-game action, and the earlier standings with NHL right now, just because I wanted to put my focus towards this topic. There's no room in any sport for a type of behavior that Mitch Miller was accused for and admitted to. And, you know, this is a sports podcast, so I'm not going to go too far into a tangent. But this behavior, this bullying, this belittling, name-calling, and physical forcing of doing the wrong things, it sucks. It's no room in sports in general or living as a equal human to everyone. It's no reason that people should be having to go through that. And, you know, years later now that you're going to say that, yes, I apologized and yes, I am a new person, I still don't see you being allowed to be in the NHL. And the fact that you're benefiting from it now with a contract is just is bitter.
That's the problem, right? That he's benefiting from it more than anything. And like Dane said, I like what you said about how these are players that ultimately, especially children, look up to as role models. And in situations like this, imagine a child does not know about the situation, sees Mitchell Miller playing in a game, and tries to model his game off Mitchell Miller's hockey. And there's nothing wrong with that side of it. But as soon as they find this information, maybe they think, oh, if he can do that, he's an NHL player, maybe I can do that too to a fellow student. And that's where the line needs to be drawn, and that's where why I don't think Mitchell Miller should be allowed in the NHL, and I'm glad to see that he's not, although benefiting from the pay is not a good thing as well.
No, and Mitchell Miller, I'm separating, just going off his stats, he had an incredible year in the USHL, which is the Tier 1 Junior League in America. He won Player of the Year, too.
He went to an outstanding college. North Dakota, obviously, it's a great college for hockey. I mean, he's undoubtedly a very talented hockey player, and if he wasn't this bad of a person in this situation, he could have had a fantastic NHL career.
Possibly, yes.
Which makes it all the more worse from his standpoint, is you do all of this work to get to the quote-unquote big leagues, and then to have something like this come up. I know that sucks for him, but it still does not equate to the impact he has had. What's the gentleman's name?
The general manager, let me correct myself, the general manager is Don Sweeney, and the president of hockey operations is Cam Neely.
So I meant the gentleman that came forth and told us about...
Oh, Isaiah Myers-Crothers?
Yeah, that's going to stick. This has probably haunted him for years.
Oh, it's traumatizing.
And to see Mitchell's name now in the media so often and have to talk about it and face somewhat of an embarrassment. He shouldn't be embarrassed, but I understand from his perspective he probably is even a little bit. And so this is a situation where he probably would rather suppress it. And, of course, he has to deal with it again every time Mitchell tries to bully his way back into the NHL. No pun absolutely intended.
And the thing is, so this only happened 6 years ago. We're talking about a 20-year-old here. This only happened 6 years ago that he did this, and he doesn't have the receipts to show what he's done to put forth an effort to try and better himself. We're also talking about, too, in a market, like of all markets, Boston, you're gonna be the one to do it? Boston, who's had its own issues with racism? Are you kidding me? And it blows my mind. Fans are calling for Cam Neely and Don Sweeney to step down now because this is embarrassing. And the league has already had its issues, whether it be the Chicago Blackhawks and the cover-up with the SA, and then as well with and just a little trigger warning, too, with Logan Mailloux, who's a defenseman that was drafted in the first round by the Canadiens, who was accused of SA. And it's unbelievable. As a hockey fan, it's despicable. I implore our listeners to do more research on the topic of Mitchell Miller as well. Because if you read the reports, we did the very surface level of what he said and what he did. What he did was absolutely despicable and evil. I don't care about environment, nurturing, like just nature of the issue. Any human that did what he did does not deserve to be put on a pedestal and praised by millions of people.
And respected. That's the issue.
So when I think about the millennials, our generation, this type of stuff sticks in young people's heads if they're a victim of it, for sure. And then you grow up with resenting your heart for the person that has done you wrong. That only leads to you wanting revenge. It's a reoccurring cycle, and we're not going to stop until there's a constant effort by everyone that we want to make change. And it has to happen as soon as possible.
Completely agree, Demos and Dane. Thank you guys for listening to a more serious subject there, as we talked a little bit about that, but obviously needed to be talked about. We're going to take it back on a little bit of a lighter note as we have Kaylee Sugimoto join the show after the break. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to this edition of The Red Zone here. We're entering the second half of our show, and we have a guest from WZND's news and sports team, Kaylee Sugimoto, formerly of ISU Gymnastics. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, back in the day. Feels like long ago at this point, right?
Honestly, a little bit, but I'm happy that I got the experience as a sophomore and a freshman, partly even though I did get hip surgery for a little bit of it, so that took me out for a hot second.
So Kaylee obviously used to compete on the team and has now become a sports reporter here with us at ZND, but you are still close with a lot of members of the team. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm close with definitely a handful of them, a few of them, because when you go through a college sport like that, and especially on a D1 level, it kind of builds those connections just by nature. You know, there's a lot of strength training you have to go to, a lot of pressure sets, and you have to have each other's back. It's pretty much essential.
So before we talk a little bit too much about the gymnastics side of it, we got to get some information here. Kaylee was nice enough to bring us a couple-minute package here of some interviews she did recently with the team during some preseason work. Here it is.
The Redbird gymnastics team is officially in its preseason, and it's only looking to go up from there. The team is showing a strong start to their upcoming winter season with not only 6 new freshmen added to the roster, but a strong push from their upperclassmen as well. Coach Megan Harrington is the assistant gymnastics coach for Illinois State. She shared some of the highlights from the Redbirds' first scrimmage of the preseason.
They were able to compete against each other and kind of get that first feeling of some pressure situation. They'll start feeling during meet season, so it was good to get them under pressure, and I think they actually handled the pressure a lot better than we thought they would, and we had some higher scores than we thought we would as well at this point in the year, so we were very happy.
Compared to last season, the Redbirds are looking better than ever before. The team is ahead of schedule, really pushing for those full sets and bars and tumbling passes on the hard floor. Head gymnastics coach Bob Conkling shared what events the team is looking great at and also where they could use a little bit more improvement before January rolls around.
The team is gelled together. I think they work hard. I feel like we needed a little more depth on a couple events, but overall, I think we're going to have a really good season.
Striving for those high difficulty skills while also maintaining near perfect form is a battle on its own. Illinois State is aiming to assert itself as a strong and prominent school in its NCAA division. Harrington shares some of the skills that are hoping to make the Redbirds stand out from their competitors.
We're hoping to have at least 4 Yurchenko 1.5s in our vault lineup this year. A few other people that are capable of 10-0 start value vault. We're hoping to have at least 4 in our vault lineup this year, which is huge. And then junior Madison Kipp also has a triple series. She does flip-flop layout.
All of these new goals and skills could not be done without the help of every gymnast, but also some freshmen willing to set the stage for what the next season of Illinois State Gymnastics is going to look like. Nyrell Bart-Williams is a new face for the Redbirds and is already making heads turn with her recent accomplishment. She spoke about some of her own personal achievements from the last inner squad.
Every event went pretty well. Bars, as Bob said, I came out with the top all-around score, which shocked me, because obviously we have Angelica Labatt.
And with new competition coming in, 4 spots on the lineup, choosing the best gymnasts to represent the Redbirds is going to be anything but easy. Conkling shared his insight on what that process is going to look like for the upcoming season.
It's really going to come down to who's looking good that week and who's landing well. We have the capability of being really good on bars, but because of some of the injuries that we have right now, it'll be weak right now on full bar routines. So that's going to be a real big focus for the next month or two.
For Red Zone, I'm Kaylee Sugimoto.
Thank you, Kaylee, for that. Thank you to Coach Conkling and other members of the ISU gymnastics team for sitting down for those interviews. But, Kaylee, what was something that you found interesting about talking to Coach ahead of the season going into this year?
I think it's really interesting about how we're moving as a Redbird gymnastics team and that they are so ahead of where they were at this time even last year. Last year, we brought in a group of freshmen that were an absolute powerhouse and really just kind of set the stage for Redbird gymnastics as being a real D1 school with these skills. And we just keep bringing in these new faces that are bringing us up even more and even promoting healthy competition within the team during practice.
So is that beneficial with depth? Is it beneficial to have a lot of young pieces that are able to produce at a D1 high level?
I think so. I think it definitely is. And I think that as much as the freshmen are putting in the work and really setting the stage for, like I said, what the season is going to look like, it's important to also remember about our upperclassmen who are pushing through it and who are contributing to the team with solid numbers. And we have, of course, senior now Angelica Labatt, who was the first Redbird Redbird gymnast to make it to the NCAA National Championships.
You talked about your own method of preparation, and you mentioned a few notable names. Could you give us a rundown on that and what it was like with those experiences?
Yeah. So when I was around 11 or 12, I started training with who is now Olympic gold medalist Jordan Childs, who eventually moved to the same gym as Simone Biles and then won gold for the USA in Tokyo. And that experience for 5 years was definitely intense. I haven't attended a full day of school from fourth grade to my senior year because I always had to leave for gymnastics. So if that showed how much of a dedication that practice took away from my childhood, it definitely did a little bit.
I definitely think it just shows how like legit you were, because the kids that were like missing school for their sports, I was always jealous of them, because I was like dude, I just wanted like one day, like I like fantasize about picking up my phone and having an agent being like, oh yeah, like I'm on my way out to the limo to go play hockey in Toronto at the Brick tournament. But
it wasn't that glamorous. I just had my mom pull up in her car, and then she just drove me to practice.
Hey, but some of the best memories are made with the parents driving us to practice. But you were talking a little bit about before the show. I asked you what event you did before you came to ISU, and then you were talking about how you went from all around to you just were booted to strictly, you said bars, right?
Bars and beam. Well, a part of that was because of my hip injury, because I ended up tearing my labrum, and I just ended up having like really bad hips for the sport. So that wasn't great, but I wanted to be an all-arounder when I initially was a freshman here at ISU. But for some reason, I came to ISU and I just forgot how to vault. I can't even explain it. I was a pretty good vaulter back when I was in club gymnastics in JO, and I was throwing out some Yurchenko fulls, which is, for those of you who don't know, like a solid level 10, solid college level vault. And I was throwing them onto the mats, and then I came to Illinois State, and I couldn't even do like a plain Yurchenko tuck, which is pretty much like a level 7 basic entry-level vault.
For sure. And then that brought me to asking you if you had the yips, but it's something else in gymnastics, if you want to touch on that.
Yeah, no, you said the yips. I thought that was funny. We call it the twisties here in gymnastics, and it's something that Simone Biles recently said that she had in her performance at Tokyo. It's where you just suddenly forget all of your muscle coordination, and I can't even explain it. You just get lost in your skill. They call it the twisties because when you twist backwards so many times, you sometimes lose where you are, and you just have no connection with your body or your mind.
Like, that always brings me to wonder if there's, like, any connection between, like, your brain activity or maybe, like, fluid in your ears, if that, like, gets messed up.
Oh, it definitely does. When you're sick, you are thrown off on beam. And I've had, like, a lot of sinus problems just because of the Midwest and the weather here. And I will go up on the beam, and if my sinuses are hurting, it really just actually throws off my balance. I can't even explain it. Every little thing matters.
I could imagine that's, like, super dangerous, though, too. If you have a sinus infection...
Oh my gosh, even if you're a little tired too. I mean, I've gone to practice a little tired because I've been doing homework like the day before, and then I go and throw a triple series on beam and I just completely eat it, for lack of better words.
It's crazy how in every sport there's like the little thing that can just throw off your game entirely. Like in baseball, if you chip a nail, a pitcher chips a nail, they might be out for 2 weeks. So, mm-hmm. and if in gymnastics you get like a sinus infection or you're just not feeling great, you can be out 3 weeks just because of body coordination. Mm-hmm. Like there's not like necessarily a direct coordination or correlation between like time needed to recover. It's just how you feel.
Right. And that's why every little thing is so important. And we're so superstitious as gymnasts as well. Every single little thing, like I said, has to be in place. I know a lot of gymnasts that will not vault if the springboard is an inch off, if it's a little bit crooked. And it's almost like a superstitious thing at that point.
You cued in my next question a little bit about superstition, but I just want to say, when you're in these situations, and either for yourself or for the Olympic gymnast you've worked with, what is it like in that mental side of it when you are alone on the bar or on the floor or something like that, and you just know you need to perform your trick right or something like that? I hope I'm getting the terminology right. But
It's skill, but it's pretty close.
What are you thinking in those moments? Like, how do you, like, are you thinking about the actual stuff ahead, like if you're almost dancing or something, or are you just keeping your mind off it and going through the motions?
What we do is we do a lot of arm sets or mental sets before our routines. So we have these keywords. So every single skill has a keyword. So when you go and compete, you remember your keywords, and that activates your muscle memory into doing the skill.
Huh.
I would practice all of these arm sets before, and then I'd go and compete, and my mind would go blank. And somehow I remember I'd be on the beam and then off of it. And that was it. It was really, it's always really strange for me. And sometimes I do great, and sometimes I fall. And that's just kind of the way it is. You just go into kind of like this trance. But that is one of my favorite parts about gymnastics, and that's one of my favorite reasons why my favorite event is beam, because I like being able to focus so hard on something like that. It takes really a weird, you have to have a little bit of a weird mindset to be really enjoying gymnastics.
So talk about Coach Conkling a little bit here. Back at ISU, 17 seasons at ISU, you obviously played under him, but also in general, what is it about his coaching that has helped the team have an NCAA qualifier last year and all the other success?
One of the things that I really like about Coach Conkling is that he really cares about the gymnast as a person and not just as a gymnast. He will look at you as a person if you are having like a bad day at school or if, you know, there's something else going on. He will see you as that and not just as a player that he can throw in the lineup.
So excuse my, because I not the most knowledge about gymnastics, but I remember as a kid, I do have some history in tumbling.
Oh, okay.
How similar. Can I say news. I'm like on fringe gymnastic level, or is that too far?
I could say, I mean, floor has a lot of tumbling in it, so okay. I could say that you have had gymnastics experience.
Cartwheel, round off.
Those are gymnastic skills.
I can imagine David getting an interception in high school and then running down the whole length of the field, pick six, and then doing a cartwheel in the end zone. Your coach yelling at you.
You got Chris Berman going rumbling, tumbling.
The only thing I've never been able to master is a backflip. You're never going to see
that.
Well,
what type of backflip?
Oh,
I have no clue.
you're a strong guy, though. I feel like if you practice that, you could do it. You could probably learn a backflip.
We'll have to see. I don't know, man.
Maybe someday.
I was today years old when I found out David Moses did tumbling as
a kid.
Would
have never guessed it. Maybe if we get enough listeners who requested on Twitter, we can try and get a video of that.
Like
is there
a live
something?
Show or something?
Well, I was going to say, if we have a video of it, we can just put it up on Twitter, on the ZND Sports Twitter, and we'll say it's like a contest. Like, if David somehow doesn't win pick six, we'll have to post a tumbling video.
We'll have to call back to Chicago to Mama and Papa Moses to see if they have something.
I mean, I know this doesn't qualify as gymnastics, but I did do jazz tap way back in the day to stay alive. By the Bee Gees.
Man.
Staying alive. Close enough.
We are getting so far away from the topic at hand. Well, actually, not a lot. We're not too much. We're still on gymnastics. But before we end the segment, I want to talk a little bit more, Kaylee, about what we can expect this season from the Redbirds. I mean, obviously, your package you showed us was a little bit about that. They have a good young core, and you talked about how they're competing for spots even their first year. Go a little bit more into that healthy competition you were telling us about.
Yeah, for sure. So, freshman Nyrell Bart Williams actually had the highest all-around score of the first inner squad of the preseason, which is meaning that she actually defeated Angelica Labatt in that. Hmm. And Angelica Labatt has been undefeated for as long as I've known, as long as I've been involved with IC Gymnastics and on the team. She has always been the star. But just seeing all of these things that they're posting on their Instagram, like Jay Mack has a new pass on the floor, which is like a front through round off back handspring double pike, which is honestly something that we've seen even like 5 years ago in elite gymnastics. There are a lot of hard e-skills being thrown on the floor right now by ISU Gymnastics. And these e-skills have been seen by Olympians back in the day, back in 2008, back in 2012 even. And the fact that we just have sophomores and freshmen just throwing it on the hard floor in October is going to be a great season for them.
Wow, that's a good way to put it. And so it shows, even for somebody who's not familiar, how impressive that is, that you are seeing former Olympic skills put to use in the early on in the season, because they don't have their actual first meet, I should say, until January, right?
Until January. So they technically don't even need to be doing all of these like hard sets on the floor and on the beam and on every event, really. They could be taking it easy right now, but no, they're really pushing for that.
What does the preseason look like? Like, what do they do for preseason?
For preseason, a lot of the time, gymnasts will keep their tumbling passes on a tumbling strip on a softer mat. For beam, they could stack mats under the beam, so when they do like their series or their skills, they have less of a fall from the beam.
Right.
They could be going into the pit on vault. They could be dismounting in the pit off bars. There are a lot of just modifications you can make until you can build up to really being able to put a competitive level routine together. And yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like.
So what I've taken away from this, though, Kaylee, is there's a lot to be excited about for the Redbird squad now, but also in the future because they're so young.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that is also one of the toughest part about gymnastics is you have to keep doing it for so long. Even as a college gymnast at, what are we, like 18, 19, 20 to 24 years old, the peak for gymnastics is essentially 16 years old or 14 years old. So the fact that they're still going even at a college level and doing all of these skills after doing like elite level and level college level gymnastics for probably about 5 years now is just crazy to me.
And is the age like the factor, because they're not fully grown yet too? So they're smaller, easier.
Yeah, when you're a lot smaller, you could just flip around. Like, I was probably my best when I was 14, and my strongest when I was 14 years old.
But because were you shorter? Or?
I was shorter, I was lighter, I had no fear. I was able to just go in and throw whatever my coach told me to do without even really thinking about how crazy it was, and that's why I got hurt so much. I've broken, like, 8 bones because of it.
Okay. So, you know, and this will be my last question. I've seen lately more and more gymnasts get a lot of notoriety for adding dance moves and dance choreography into their routines.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we're starting to see a lot more of? And can we potentially see it here with the Redbirds?
Gymnastics has always intertwined heavily with dance. In fact, when I was a gymnast, an hour of our last practice was dedicated to ballet. So I could also say that I did ballet. But a lot of it is shown on beam and floor, where your choreography is everything, where you're trying to impress the judges and then incorporating those leaps and jumps in it. Like a tourjeté half is worth, I actually have no idea how much it is worth on a skill level, but that is like a ballet leap. And it is a common skill in gymnastics. We have a lot of turns that are worth a lot of value. So if you are flexible and have that dance element, you could also, that's a very underrated way of looking at, you could get very far in scoring.
We could talk about this all day, to be completely honest with you. Kaylee, we'll have to have you on again during the season in the winter and talk a little bit about what's going on with the team. But thank you for joining us for this segment. And you can hear her report on the team again throughout newscasts this week on ZND on Monday. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time for Pick 6. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. It's time for Pick 6. We make our picks for 6 of this weekend's NFL games, and you people decide if you want to ride with me or David based on the standings. It's looking like it's going to be more of David going forward. I don't have the standings in front of me this week. I sometimes read them all off, but I think we could just say that Steve and David are tied at the top. Guest and Dane are right at their heels. And then there's me down in the cellar of Pick 6 after consistently picking the Bears and Bucks week in and week out. Starting it off with the Lions and Bears. David Moses.
Oh, the Bears. It's been a long time coming. I have not bet on my Bears in about 3 weeks. And strategically, though, I am a real fan, trust me. But I like what they're doing right now. I'm going to go with Justin Fields after a historic week that he has had last year. I don't think he's going to fall off too hard, especially against the, 1-5, 1-6 Lions.
Well, they got a win last week.
I'm sorry, Steve.
Against the Packers.
Okay, two, whatever.
And that's why I'm going to say the Bears, because if the Bears beat the Lions, which I think they will, then we are technically greater than Packers before our matchup in December. Kaylee?
I'm also going to say the Bears. A lot of Justin Field memes have just made it to my Twitter feed for some reason. and I don't really know why. I just know my friends are Bears fans.
But. Love to hear it. Not David. Sorry, David said the Bears. Steve said the Lions, no surprise, as the Lions fan he is. Dane gave me a tip earlier that this might finally be the week, but he has a smile on his
Look
face.
Look at him grinning.
Give me the Bears.
Say it a little bit louder into the mic.
Give me the Bears.
He says the Bears. For the first time in Red Zone 2022 history, Dane Dreyfus has gone with the Bears.
Oh, yes.
I'm mad because that's going to curse him now. Not the Lions might have to win. But Dane,
I'm so unhappy.
Dane and I go with the Bears, leaving Steve on the Lonely Island. We're going to move on from that because I can see literally in Dane's face that he is in pain. We'll talk about a team that he likes better, the Packers.
Are you just going to let me lead off, too?
The way he slowed that down for you.
Let's lead that one off with the Cowboys visiting the Packers at Lambeau Field. What do you think?
Give me Mike McCarthy and the Dallas
Cowboys.
Wow. What a start
for
Dane.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I'm
going to
go with the Cowboys as well.
What a year.
I always go with what's hot and what's not, as you guys know. Not that it's really helped me in any way. I talk about it like it's successful, but it's not. But I like the Cowboys here, and I think the Packers will actually continue to lose until they finally beat the Bears in December. Wouldn't that be great if the Packers lose until they play the Bears, and the Bears are the team that break
it
up?
I don't think they beat them in December. I think I was talking to my Uncle Tom, who is a season ticket holder for
the
Packers.
I have an Uncle Tom, too. He joined the show. We should have your Uncle Tom on the show.
I don't think that would go well. I think the FCC would be breathing down our necks. But he told me he genuinely thinks that they might have won their last game for the year, which honestly might not even be a bad thing. The year is basically foregone and washed. So, yeah, that's basically how it feels to be a Packer fan right now. And I'm guessing this is how it usually feels to be a Bears fan.
Well, better days are ahead for us Chicago Bears fans.
Misery is better with company. So,
Steve said the Cowboys. Kaylee, what do you think?
I'm also going to say the Cowboys because I think that's what people are betting on.
Yep, that's a
I
solid
like
pick.
That. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good
squad ride. Squad ride. David?
I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
Full squad.
Yep, just a better team.
All right, that's a full sweep. Let's take a look now.
I should have dead-kid that. I should have totally dead-kid that.
Gone with just the Packers. But we're going to take it over to Germany where Dane called it over. What did you call it? What was it?
Pardon my take, called it Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest.
I don't like the over in that game. I think it's 44.5. I actually like the under, to be honest.
I think this one we're actually going to have a little bit of a split. Steve is going with the Bucks, and I'm also, to no one's surprise, going to go with the Bucks. Andy P tanked me last week by picking the Rams when I would have picked the Bucks, and the Bucks actually won. Brady and the boys are somewhat back in business based on the last drive of that game. And the NFL's greatest quarterback ever, going to the first game ever in a different country, he's going to try and win. Obviously, he tries to win every game, but I hope it's going to work out for the Buccaneers in this one. I'm going with the Bucks.
I think what's weird is I want to go through the stats of the pick six. I think I'm undefeated in picking the Buccaneers game because I took the Ravens over them. I took them over the Rams. And then they played someone else this year that I betted against Tom Brady. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks here, who are 6-3 against the spread. They are underdogs by 2.5 points. I don't know why the Seahawks have been underdogs. They're 5-3, currently sit atop the NFC West. And Geno Smith and Kenneth Walker, they've been those guys. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Who would have thought that the Sharks would be at a better position than the Broncos in Week 10? After that Russell Wilson trade, it's awesome.
Oh, Dane, I think you actually did call it. You were telling me about how you didn't buy into all of the hype with the Broncos. I don't mean to go off of pick
Well, it's not
six,
even buying into the Broncos hype, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it's also just buying into this Geno Smith hype. After week one, people thought, oh, Geno Smith's the best, but it'll last maybe a week or two. But it's week 10, and he's looked really solid. David, what do you think in this one?
He was good at West Virginia.
You know, this one was a tough one, just like I'm always such a momentum-driven person, and I make these decisions off of momentum. And the logical decision will probably be Seattle. But I don't know. I like the Buccaneers in this one. I like Tom Brady after a much-needed win. Fun fact, the NFC South, the Buccaneers are leading that division right now with a 4-5 record. You wouldn't expect a 4-6, whatever it is. I'm going to go with the Buccaneers. I think they're going to ride this, you know, little win streak, two-week win streak, see what they do, you know, going forward.
Kaylee, what do you think?
I'm from Washington State, Portland, Oregon area, so I always have to go with the good old Seattle Seahawks.
I respect that one,
too. I feel like my family would be very mad if I didn't.
Well, you can't make the family mad, right? Take a look now at Sunday Night Football. I was rolling my eyes typing in this one on my paper today. I don't like either of these teams. I don't really have anything against them. I just think both of them are such underperformers this season in the Chargers and the Niners. Another primetime game this weekend that's just hard to bet, hard to watch. I'm going to go with the Niners because they're at home, and I think maybe C-Mac can do something is what will be his third game. I think that Chargers offense is really solid, though, too. I really don't know what to pick aside from just the Niners being home. That's really going to be what it comes down to for me.
I think you're mistaken here. I think this is probably the easiest game on the slate to bet. I'm going to Niners here. McCaffrey's is completely changed that offense. They're much more dynamic now. The team is getting healthier on defense, though they did just lose Jason Verrett to a torn Achilles, which is a shame. He's a great corner, always struggles with injuries. But the number one receiver on the Chargers before the year was their number four to start the year. So I think the Niners win this one handily. And I feel bad for Justin Herbert, but that's just the way it goes.
David?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 49ers. We talked about it before the show. The Chargers have had such a hard time staying healthy this year. I know J.C. Jackson is out. Keenan Allen is out. Mm-hmm. And they have another receiver out, Mike Williams. I'm sorry, I'm brain
Mike Will made it.
Yeah, it's just not going to make it easier for Justin Herbert and this offense to move. I'm going to go with the 49ers.
News and Sports Operations Director Broderick Gavin. Gavin Broderick, his name is Broderick Gavin on my phone, so I read it backwards, but he said, you guys all picked against the Lions. This show stinks. He is also a Lions fan. Steve picked the Lions, Gavin. But, Kaylee, what do you think in this one with the Chargers and 49ers?
I'm going to say the 49ers. I just flipped a coin.
Sweep.
So.
There we go.
I've made picks before like that, too. I think I did that 2 weeks ago because I was just so down that I just had to do something, so I did a coin flip. Now let's take a look at Monday Night Football, Commanders and Eagles, a divisional battle between the Commanders and then one of the NFL's hottest teams in the Eagles. I'm going to go with the team that stays hot. They keep going on the undefeated streak. I'm going to go with Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles in this one pretty handedly at home.
Couldn't agree more. Taylor Heineke will not be buying a pair of Kelly Green Jordans. It's the Eagles in this one.
What do they do? E-A-G-L-E-S. Eagles, Eagles, Eagles. I'm going to ride the hot streak. I'm going with the Eagles.
Kaylee, what do you think?
Also, going with the Eagles, I called my dad about this one.
There we go.
Oh, there's no phone a friend in the pick six.
Dad's a smart man.
Well, I kind of phoned a friend the time we had Tom on because I was actually making my picks with a little bit of confidence because he was riding with the Bears in that one too.
He really showed out, honestly.
He did. He did well too, and that was the week that the Bears won. The Packers lost only their first or second loss in a row. So
I feel like I might have found a new arch nemesis, honestly, or maybe I'm just maybe the next Montagues and Capulets is the Fernellis and the Dreyfuses.
It might be. Although we agreed on the Packers and Bears game this week, this might be the only time in Pick Six history that we agreed on both the Bears pick and the Packers pick.
I don't care.
Looking at Thursday Night Football.
I still dislike you very much.
Looking at Thursday Night Football, we have the Falcons and the Panthers. I'm going to go with the Panthers on this one. They're the home team. They showed some good signs the other couple weeks ago beating the Bucks. The Falcons are really good at keeping it close, but they can't close out, almost like the Lions. I think the Panthers in this one, although I will admit it is a very mid-level but tight game. David?
Yeah, this is going to be a ugly game, to say the least. Falcons versus Panthers, two teams that are not really expected to do well. However, the Falcons have lived up to or exceeded expectations, I think, of their fan base. And just the all-around senses of the NFL, they have played a lot better than a lot of people expected. Marcus Mariota has had a really good year. Cordero Patterson, you know, despite having a little bit of injuries, he's coming back this week. He's going to add a big level to that backfield. An explosive back who's able to get into the end zone. I'm going with the Falcons, you know, to win this game.
Kaylee, what do you think?
I go with what the spread says, so Falcons.
Nice. And the Falcons always find a way to cover. So
they're on a 3-week losing streak against the spread, I believe.
Really? I remember earlier in the year it was close, but really, you're the betting expert here, so I believe you.
Yeah, they were America's darling to start the year off, and now it's turning into more of the Cowboys and the Seahawks. But this game is really interesting to me. Because I'm going to call my shot here like Babe Ruth. P.J. Walker's getting benched this game because you have the stable of quarterbacks of Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, who came in relief of P.J. Walker last week against the Bengals and actually did okay. I think Darnold is the next QB up, though. P.J. Walker's going to get benched. Give me the Falcons in this one. I don't know if they necessarily cover, but this is the road to the Panthers getting a top two pick, taking a quarterback in the draft. But I just don't know what to make of them. If you love watching some ground and pound football, this is the game for you. There might be over 60 rushes in this game.
And you've got to hate that for Baker Mayfield. I'm gonna make it quick. The former number one pick in the NFL draft, not able to, you know, he's not even, what is he, 6 years in, 5 years in, and now he's finding himself, you know, riding the bench. It sucks to see.
Former Heisman winner at that. It's something you've seen a couple times with a Heisman winner go on to the NFL and just not be able to find success between different teams. I mean, I think specifically of Tim Tebow, and obviously there are Heisman winners that do really well, but Baker Mayfield is quickly following in that Tebow path, although it actually is very similar because Baker's won a playoff game as well.
I had any time Tim Tebow mentioned in the show on my parlay, so I'm really happy that that hit at plus 1,000 odds.
It was plus 1,000 for any time Tim Tebow mentioned?
Yeah, you got to love Tebow.
That might be the only Tim Tebow mention of the season, I think.
Now I'm definitely going to mention it next episode.
That's tampering because you just said it. We're going to call it for this edition of The Red Zone. Thank you for listening. I've been Mikey Fernelli alongside Dane Dreyfus, David Moses, and Kaylee Sugimoto. Have a great night.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again? Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.